Accession number 13858, Reel 2.
Commander Sykes, Reel 2. So what happened after your accident at Arbroath in 42?
Well, then I was I was sick for quite a long time because I injured my back and my leg, and I was also put off flying for about 6 months. And after that time, I was very keen to get back to flying again, so I volunteered to do a fighter course at a place called Yeovilton down in the south. And I started doing that that fighter course, which I failed because my sight went. Whether they thought I had entered lots of tests with my eyes, and I think they thought it was something to do with being knocked unconscious and that sort of thing. And I had, as I say, various eye tests were done and so on, and they then decided then that I wasn't, my eyesight wasn't good enough to become a fighter pilot, which is very distressing, because which I very much wanted to do, particularly in those days. And so I was then put off active flying, but I was allowed to do ordinary flying, non-operational flying. I wasn't allowed to go and go do fighter flying and that sort of thing because of eyes. So I was then sent to Victorious, the aircraft carrier, as Lieutenant Commander Flying.
What did that job involve?
Now that involved the whole of the running of the flying on the flight deck. It entailed organizing all the aircraft in their right order on the flight deck to take off. It meant seeing that they all took off in the right order. It meant landing them all on, being responsible for the batting to land them all on, and also see that they all got down in the hangars and that they were all put down in the hangars in the correct order and so on. In fact, everything appertaining with the operation of the aircraft.
What were the main problems that you had doing the job?
Well, the main problems were dealing with the many, many accidents we used to have, because people used to come in. We had a lot of young RNVR pilots, and they were very good and they were very brave, but some of them were inexperienced, and they would land on and they would crash their aircraft. Unfortunately, not many of them were hurt badly. And it entailed a great deal of trouble and organization to remove the aircraft, because they were then blocking the runway, so it was, so the other ones couldn't land. And you had to have an organization which did that removal very quickly indeed. Otherwise, all the other ones waiting to land on would have run out of petrol and had to land in the sea, which did happen once or twice. And that was one of the chief problems. The other one was making sure that you got them all in the right order, because they all had to go off in their right order, with the wing leader first, the other ones the second, and who's flying on the left or the right had to be number one, number two, number three. So the night before, when you put them all in the hangar, you had to make sure that they were all right in the hangar to come up in the right order, because you couldn't bring them up and then put them down again, bring them up, because that would take all day long. And you also had to be very, very quick in getting them ready on the deck, because there was never very much time. We all had to be very careful about the speed with which we worked at, because particularly when we had to arrange them, call it, in the dark, because of course all the ships had to be dark, and so you had to work in the dark if you were doing them at dawn before daylight.
Where did you join Victorious?
Where?
Yes.
In Liverpool. And the first thing we did when we joined there, we had the squadrons came on board, and we went off to Norway in company with various other carriers and so on, and carried out the bombing of the Tirpitz in Karfjord. Well, we had three squadrons on board then, two squadrons of Barracudas, and they went over and we had 2 days bombing of the the battleship there, wasn't it? Yes, I say that we bombed the Tirpitz. We did two runs up there with three other carriers and the attendant battleships and cruisers and submarines, and eventually very successfully bombed her. And we lost a few aircraft, but she was put out of action for about 6 or 7 months until she was rebombed again by one of the midget submarines some 7 months later. So she never did very much good. Anyway, it was a very successful operation there. We had no opposition from the sea, but there was quite a few opposition from the chaps who were flying there because the Germans appeared and started knocking a few aircraft down.
Did the German Air Force get through to the carrier?
Yes, no, they didn't. But we always used to have what they used to call CAPs around because the fighter aircraft would always be a flight or two or three flights hanging around there, protecting the fleet in case of Germans, as well as anti-submarine aircraft, which would be patrolling all around waiting for anti-submarines, detecting them by airstick and that sort of thing. And then we went back to Scarpa Flow two or three times after that. And then after that, we pushed off and went to the Far East, to the Japanese War. That was about 1943. We sailed out via Gibraltar and through the Suez Canal, Aden, and based ourselves then in Ceylon in Trincomalee, where we did various attacks on the Car Nicobar Islands and the Andaman Islands, which are the Eastern Malay, which were occupied by the Japs. And we used to sail out with a fleet there, about five or six carriers and the attendant destroyers and battleships and everything from Trincomalee, and bomb these oil refineries, Pelembang and Car Nicobar, and various islands like that. And we did that very successfully, one or two. We lost quite a few because the Japs, they're very efficient little fighter aircraft, used to come out and knock some of our boys down. But we did quite a lot of very successful damage, as the photographic interpretation. We would follow up with photographic aircraft would come and take photographs of the damage done. And the interpreters of the photographic evidence were very, very clever indeed. They could almost, in those days, tell under microscopes and that sort of thing, the exact pinpointing of the bombs, and they were very, very successful. And we lost quite a few. We had some very brave submariners who used to go out and patrol up and down near the shores of the place where we were carrying raids out. So if any of our chaps came down, they were instructed to make their way to the coast where the submarines would pick them up, hopefully. Because those that weren't picked up, of course, subsequently four of them were beheaded by the Japs, as we've discovered later on. Four Fleet Air Arm chaps. However, we did that for about 6 or 7 months. And then we left there with the fleet and then went to Sydney, where we joined the British Pacific Fleet. And we became then what the Americans call the Fast Carrier Task Force, in which we had four carriers: Victorious, Implacable, Indefatigable, and Illustrious. And we left Sydney in company with a lot of battleships and cruisers, and went up north to join the American 7th Fleet, where we operated with them for quite a long time, sending our aircraft off to to bomb the islands, which the Americans then were stepping up gradually towards Japan. And one particular one was a place called, an island called Shikishima Gunto, which was very heavily guarded by the Japanese. And the Americans were trying to get them out, and we assisted with bombing them and strafing them and so on. And there was a good deal of opposition from them. And again, quite a lot of our chaps were shot down. And then we used to refuel at sea. We spent a very considerable amount of time at sea. 41 days was the most we ever spent. Because the fleet train, as we used to call them, would come up and replenish us with fuel and petrol, avgas, and all those sort of things.
What did you feel about operating with the American fleet?
Well, they weren't very kind to us to begin with, because they didn't particularly want us there. There was a rather snooty chap called Admiral King who didn't want the British there, because they thought they were much superior, and they thought that we were just war-weary and rather inferior in every way. But they soon altered their tune, because came the arrival of the kamikazes, who came bundling down on our decks and on their decks, owing to the fact that all the British carriers were built with 3 inches of armour plating on the deck, as opposed to all the huge, great American aircraft, which were built with wooden decks. So when the kamikazes landed on the decks there, nose-dived into them, they went straight through the wooden decks, into the hangars, set everything ablaze. There was a huge explosion, and within 20 minutes, when a huge carrier was on fire, turned turtle and was sunk. Of course, none of that ever appeared in the world press, because nobody ever knew, of course. And 3 of them were sunk like that in very, very quick succession. At the same time, they were landing on our deck, but none of them ever went through our decks. So they never got through into the carrier, which is the real damage they were trying to do. All they did was to... Well, we had 3 landed on our deck. They wrecked quite a few aircraft which were on the deck, parked on the deck, killed a few chaps on the deck and that sort of thing.
Did you have any narrow escapes yourself when the attacks occurred?
Yes, I did, because I was actually on the deck when the second one came down. And it landed fairly near where I was, and bits of it flew off and hit me on the shoulder, but it didn't do me any damage. But I was rather affected by the blast and the bang, which sort of tended to knock me back. But that was all. I mean, I wasn't wounded or badly, but it's the blast and the shock, really. However,
did any of your friends get badly wounded?
Yes, there was one or two of them killed. It was when they we had these batsmen, you know what I mean by batsmen, the deck landing control officer, a chap called Bill Banning, who was my second batsman, Lieutenant Banning. Well, he was killed by the kamikaze. He was running about on the deck, and it knocked him somewhere, I don't know, or anyway. He was killed, and about 3 or 4 others, the aircraft handling party, were killed in the first one.
What was your attitude towards the enemy? Was there any hatred?
Well, you didn't. You just got on with the job. And they were just sort of little, by little nips, going to get down them and get home, you know. And self-preservation, knock them down, because if they didn't, they'd knock you down. Self-instinct.
Did the kamikazes attack the battleships?
No. No, they didn't. That was what made us all laugh. They never went for any of the battleships at all, for the obvious reasons we were talking about earlier on. And the battleships and all of them used to open up fire, and usually at our own aircraft, because they were too stupid to have aircraft recognition. And they always obviously went for the carriers, as they did for the American carriers as well. So all the battleships and the cruisers were all immune.
What else do you remember happening in the Far East, apart from Shikishima Gunto?
Well, we went up to a place called Ulithi, and then we went to the Philippines, where we stayed for about 10 days and rested and repaired various stuff in the ship. And then we went to this place, Ulithi, which is the most incredible sort of atoll there, and I've never seen anything like it. When we went in there, the number of ships which were in there, there were absolutely thousands of them, all Americans. It was one of the American bases. And there were thousands of ships of all shapes and sizes in this vast atoll. You couldn't believe there were so many ships existed on Earth. There's only one part of the American Pacific Fleet. Anyway. And of course, it was very, 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 very hot in the... I remember the great thing was the gross discomfort, particularly for the pilots who were flying, because the sun would beat down all day long on the flight deck, the iron flight deck, and then as soon as darkness fell, you would have to shut all the portholes and darken ship, which meant, of course, keeping all the heat in the ship and the heat in the hangars and the heat in the cabins and underneath there was absolutely awful. And in those days, of course, there was no air conditioning.
Was it a great fire hazard?
Mm?
Was it a great fire hazard?
Well, not so much, because all the hangars had a very, very excellent system of firefighting sprinklers and all sorts of arrangements against fire. And you could shut off the hangars and shut off sections of the hangars if there was a fire anywhere. Of course, if they were just like these Americans, if we'd gone right through into the hangar, of course, then it wouldn't do anything. But there were great, tremendous precautions taken. Obviously, refilling aircraft, refueling them in the hangar and that sort of thing, and on the deck. Well, then we spent a lot of time back. We used to go back to Sydney for a 10-day rest every so often, beat the place up in Sydney and have a rest there, then come back up north again and then join the American fleet and do another tour of operations. And then eventually we heard with great relief that they'd let off the bomb over Nagasaki. And then we turned back, and with great relief, we came back to Sydney when the war was over. We stayed there for some time, celebrating, behaving rather badly.
In what way?
And
drunkenness?
Well, there's quite a lot of partying going on. A lot of very nice girls around the place, and waiting to receive us. We thought we were really rather smart heroes, very good scene. But then we came back after the end of the war. We came back to England in Victorious, and we brought back with us quite a few ex-Japanese prisoners who were in a terrible state. But they soon recovered. They were very splendid men.
What was the attitude of the Australians, civilians, towards the British and American
soldiers? Oh, well, they were very pro. They were very, very pro the fleets that together. The Americans used to come down and refuel them. They were very, very pro the Navy. They simply couldn't do enough for us. I mean, as I say, we're almost little heroes, and the sailors never had it so good. They were all received with tremendous hospitality, and everybody opened their houses, homes to us, and they were absolutely marvellous, marvellous people.
Was there any discrimination on the part of the Australians as between the British and the Americans?
No, none at all, no. Absolutely none at all. I think, if anything, they tended to like us a bit better, because, after all, we were more blood brothers than the Americans were.